and welcome to the Rookie Pastor Podcast. My name's Eric Mabbitt, pastor of Bailey Presbyterian Church, and today bringing you part two of my conversation with Michael Preston. Michael Preston is the founder of Mississippi Counseling Associates, and we get into so much today. It's such an encouraging conversation that I had with him. We talk about the importance of naming emotions, then what to do with them after you have named them. We talk about the importance of doing this within the context of good community that you can be open with. And we also talk about when it's the time to reach out to a counselor. We talk about why counseling can be helpful to you, and the courage that it takes to see a counselor and the relief that comes when you're able to be honest and open with someone else about what is going on deep inside. We also talk about what makes a good counselor, and we even, Michael references a study about how big mountains appear to people when they're standing alone or when they're standing with others. And so it's incredibly interesting conversation, and also, we conclude where Michael shares some texts and theological truths that he is turning to for his own comfort. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation. I hope it is of benefit to you. And make sure that you listen to the end, and also make sure that you check out the show notes at therookiepastor.com. And so without further ado, we will jump right into the episode as we continue our conversation with Michael Preston.
Right. Mm-hmm. So especially right now, I would encourage people to, you can Google lots of words like emotion wheel, feeling word list, all these things. There's a really nice one called, it's an emotional word wheel, and it's got a bunch of colors on it. And I'll send you a link for it, Eric, and you can pop it up however you want.
Yeah. Well, I'll put some show notes together.
So. Right. And so it'll start with like a more core emotion, and it'll branch out by color, and you can kind of see, oh, this is what I'm feeling. And if you have a difficulty identifying, really naming those emotions once you come across them. There's a good one called the grief ball. As I mentioned grief earlier, it's called the grief ball, the entangled web of emotions, right? And then what I use that one in my office, and I have people use colored pencil and have them color each emotion that they are experiencing. And they say, you know, what color do I use? Whatever you want. And some people just go all black, right? That's just how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. But giving themselves the freedom to do whatever they want and to identify the emotions in particular, that helps our brain organize what's going on and will decrease your panic. Most people think, oh my gosh, if I realize how much I'm feeling, I'm going to get even worse. Like, I can barely handle my anxiety. How in the world could I handle all these other emotions? Well, I understand that idea, but the idea really is that your anxiety is why it's there, because all of these other emotions exist and are just flooding to the surface. And so as we help that slow down and identify each one of them, it'll actually calm us down.
And not that emotions are our enemies, but almost kind of like naming the enemy.
Yeah.
It essentially, it gives us a sense of, there is a... There's a sense of relief when you can define something.
Yeah. Well, think about, like, you could be in the woods, and if you hear something stepping off in the woods, our brain doesn't immediately go to probably a bunny rabbit.
You're right.
We go, bear, that's a bear, you know?
Yeah.
And it, whoop, panic, right?
Yeah.
When that little bunny rabbit jumps out onto the trail, and we go, oh, bunny, just a bunny. Could have been a mountain lion for all I knew, and that's why panic was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then, and even if it is a mountain lion,
at least you know what to do.
If you know, yeah, then if you know what to do with mountain lions,
you have a better sense of what to do with a mountain lion.
Yeah. So, we'll have a separate show about survival skills in the wilderness.
Yeah.
So we'll do a separate
featuring
episode.
Bear Grylls.
Yeah. So, well, you've got a beard. So that's,
I do have a beard. That's half the Bear Grylls battle.
Exactly. So there you go. Yeah. So beyond, so once you identify, an emotion that you're wrestling with, and you're, so let's just say it's just fear. Let's just say I'm so afraid that me or my kids or my parents are going to get sick. And I'm just scared about it. Mm-hmm. What do you do with that? And I know this is all generalities. I mean, you can't give specific advice for every single person, but I mean, sure. I'm just, what's the general process of how do you, once you identify the emotion, then where do you go next with it?
I go to others. This is a time where, so in general speaking, I always recommend good community. We do not do life well, even in the old normal way, without a good sense of community, right? When I'm not sharing those things with others, even when things are normal, they start to break down, right? Marriages break down, work breaks down, and then we turn to things that help quiet that stuff, right? So anything that'll drown it out, video games, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, drinking, porn, whatever it is, that's going to get cranked up in this time, especially, right?
Yeah.
Because there's more going on, and I'm going to use the same tools that I've always used, except now it's going to be exaggerated because now the emotions themselves are exaggerated. And so for me, the most important thing I can do with what I'm feeling is have a group of people that will hold space for what I'm feeling. And that doesn't have to be a counselor. That's a big part of what I'm doing right now is just holding space for people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, for me, what I'm also doing for me is I'm still attending a Friday morning meeting on Zoom with a group of guys that I met with before all of this, right? Yesterday, I called a friend and we talked for an hour as my kids played on the outdoor little playset thing they've got. I sat in a chair and talked through life with them. I talked through what do they see their future looks like? What dreams are they still working with, right? Day before that, had an opportunity to reach out to another friend. Having people reach out to me and leave me a voicemail just to say thinking about you has been encouraging. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a second, there was about a week where I couldn't call anybody because it was really insane. But I knew there were people on the outside of my house who did think about me. And so if you're in a position to make a call, make a call. If you got to leave a voicemail, let them know you're thinking about them. That can be the thing that helps stave that person from feeling overwhelmed.
So you're not saying go binge watch Tiger King.
I'm not saying not do that.
Just not as a substitute.
I'm saying binge watch Tiger King, but also call your friend.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Don't make those mutually exclusive. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Call your friend to talk about.
Yes. So. I mean, that's what you would be doing at work. I mean, besides working at work, right?
Because
that's all we do is work at work. We don't talk about Tiger King. right? But that brings in that sense of normalcy, right?
Yeah.
Hey, we would be doing this. I think it was Saturday night. I sat down and called a couple of the guys that I would normally just hang out with and laugh.
Yeah.
Right? And we just laughed. I probably laughed more than I had in this whole time. And it just felt like, oh, wow, that was life-giving.
Yeah.
To be able to do something in some way that felt normal.
Yeah, there was a sense in, or we're talking about like, because what we did was for our church, we broke up all the families into, well, we assigned them to officers in the church. And so that they would get weekly calls or text messages, you know, basically checking with them, asking them how they could pray for them, you know, mm-hmm. and so that way we could also identify any material needs that needed to be developed, mm-hmm. but also we could just care for people in that way. And then but one thing we realized also is just like all those little moments that you get on Sunday where you're in the, during the fellowship time, we do coffee and donuts, we share prayer requests and like you, people share what's going on, but you also see people, you see someone who's sad or who's, you know, upset or withdrawn and you can go talk to them or you rub shoulders with people. And I mean, literally we're not allowed to rub shoulders. We're not allowed to,
don't do it.
You know, it's like, Tate Reeves will parachute down and, you know,
fine you $500.
Is right, and spray you with disinfectant. So, and so there's, you know, but we just realized like those little things are gone, you know, those things are gone. And so we have to, I was just talking with a guy who coaches churches and pastors, and he was saying how we have to be way more intentional relationally in a way that we haven't had to intentionally be relational before. Like, because
we got some contact with each other.
In a small church like mine, like it's naturally relational because it's small. It's like, it just happens.
And I think as a whole, we, as a group of people I'd say we tend to avoid pain, and painful emotions. And so in this time in particular, I think that's a really terrible idea, because we're all in pain, right?
Yes.
So when you ask the question, like, what should people be doing with these things? The first thing that comes to my mind is, was a quote by Brennan Manning. And I looked it up. This is from his book, Abba's Child. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about our past, but I will speak to this in a way that he still speaks to our present in our current situation, right? And he says, in a futile attempt to erase our past. And so what I would say is in a futile attempt to ignore how awful of a situation we're in, right?
Yeah.
We deprive the community of our healing gift. If we conceal our wounds out of fear and shame, our inner darkness can neither be illuminated nor become a light for others. In other words, if we're feeling these things, and we're scared, and we're afraid, and we're panicking, or we feel depressed, or we feel anxious, or we find ourselves getting more angry, what we tend to do is keep that to ourselves. And that hasn't changed, right? What Brennan's saying is, if you do that, two things that are devastating happen. That part of your life will get worse as it lives in darkness and doesn't get any light and nobody knows it exists. And it gets into the, I'm the craziest person in the room. And then we get worse. So the first pain is that we find no healing. Mm-hmm. And the second pain is that somebody else that is going through the exact same thing also finds no healing because nobody else stepped into the light, shone a light, and like often will, as I speak to those painful things, right, in almost in every meeting I've been in, where men are sharing what they are feeling and what's going on for them during this thing, somebody will say, you saying those words helped me put words to what I couldn't find words for. And that's the act of being a light and illuminating something for somebody else. It's like going in and turning on a light in a dark place. And they go, oh, that's what that is. Thank you.
Mm, yeah.
Right. So that's the twofold benefit of taking these things we find and turning to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Healing for ourselves and healing for them.
So if that's well put. So if we're doing this and we're taking other people and, but we keep exploding in anger or we feel like we're just trapped in this cycle or it's just continues to get darker and darker for us. We're starting to get, you know, the fancy way to say it is, suicidal ideations, but we start maybe thinking about harmful thoughts about ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, talking about it's better to be dead than alive and start going down that dark path in there. I mean, and you know, I would say, in my mind, that's obviously a time to reach out, and so where should people start there? I mean, where should they start if they're trying to look, they can't fix it themselves. So where should they go next?
Yeah. So if you're reaching out to friends, you're doing what you can, but you find that it's still difficult. I would say definitely look into counseling. And in the notes of this thing, along with those links to those helpful pages, you could just click on mscounselingassociates.com. Yep,
that'll be in there.
There's two ways you can reach out to us. You have your phone number, you can call. We've got it right here. It's ringing. I mean, people are calling all the time. There's another way to reach out via just giving us your email and your phone number and shooting us a quick message. I tend to respond within 24 hours. And we set up an appointment and we just start talking. One of the things that all of this brings up is the idea of Philippians 4, the be anxious for nothing, which mm-hmm. in this time can feel really glib.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like it's working, right? Like if I'm supposed to be anxious for nothing, it's not really working right now because I'm anxious. I want to read a piece of this. It says, don't fret or worry. Instead of worrying, pray. Let petitions and praise shape your worries into prayers, letting God know your concerns. And before you know it, a sense of God's wholeness and everything coming together for good will come and settle you down. And it's a wonderful what happens when Christ displaces worry at the center of your life. It's a sweet piece of scripture here. But one of the things that I think is really important to remember about this piece of scripture is it's not saying instantly. It's not saying if you say a prayer about not feeling anxious, at the end of that prayer, you will not feel anxious.
Right.
That's not how this works, right? Mm-hmm. But it is saying, hey, sit. Sit in the anxiety. Sit in that feeling. And in time, right, that peace will come to you. But what I want to point out is that right now, much like my headache, I could take ibuprofen, right? And it kind of goes away. But if I have cancer, I have to crank the treatment up, right?
Yeah.
I've got to change the treatment modality completely. And the stronger the cancer, the stronger the treatment. This is a situation where this is constant. Mm-hmm. It's a constant anxiety producer. So even our normal routine of what we would normally do with anxiety is going to need to be cranked up, right? Yeah. The illness is cranked up, treatment be cranked up, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for some, that will mean going to counseling,
yeah.
right? For some, that will mean somebody who knows how to professionally walk through anxiety with somebody who can sit in that space with them and who can help bring a more sense of calmness.
Yeah,
I had a higher level of treatment.
I had a guy, and this was years ago, and he was a good friend of mine, and he really needed some counseling, but he didn't know it.
Yeah.
And so, and I told him, you know, man, you need to go see a counselor about this issue. And he was, you know, he was real kind of, I mean, to put it hesitant was mild. He was yeah. just kind of like, I don't think so. And he was, I mean, he was raised in the South, drove a truck, dip, spit. I mean, it's just like, he was a good Southern boy. And so, you know, and I don't know exactly specifically, he didn't say his words, but you know, for a lot of people in their minds, you know, well, only crazy people go to counseling or it's only really messed up people go to counseling. And he, and so the way I explained it to him was this, because he likes his truck. And so I was like, man, if your truck breaks down and you can't fix it, what are you going to do? And he's like, well, I'm taking the mechanic. And I was like, yeah, the counselor is the mechanic for your emotions.
Yeah.
You tried.
That's good.
You can't really fix good. It.
I'll probably go use that, but I won't give you any credit.
Hey, go for it. It's free. So I minimal charge. So, and then, in your heart, you can give me credit. But that's, and there, you know, and he's just like, and he was like, oh, okay. And then he went and he was in counseling for at least a year or two. And, yeah. and it was, he thanked me for that. And he was just like, yeah, that really helped.
You know, it is a scary process to go to counseling. I won't even pull a punch on that. It is so difficult to sit across from somebody who you don't know, usually, who you can't imagine what they're thinking about you, but you're going to reveal a bunch of things to them that maybe you've never told anybody in your life, and you are hoping that they don't call you crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a scary process.
I'll tell you this, as someone who's been through a lot of counseling, I was in counseling as a teenager who later got sent to a youth intervention program that in years to come closed. So, I don't think it was any, I don't know if it was for bad reasons or not, but they managed to run out of money. But then also as one who was in, I was in counseling before I became a pastor my last year in seminary, because I realized I had some issues I needed to work out before I took the responsibility to be counseling others, to be shepherding others, that there was some stuff I needed to get a handle on myself. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's, I would say it's funny. It's, there's a certain freedom in talking to a stranger because they're not connected to your problems.
Right.
Once you get past, it's like there's the high wall of, I'm going to tell this stranger my deepest, darkest, you know, stuff. But once you do that and you realize they don't think you're crazy, that they're kind of, that they're safe, then it's actually becomes very easy to just, you'll tell them anything because you're like, they're also disconnected from your world. Mm-hmm. And so telling them has no implications, negative implications on your life. Like you're not going to get fired or you're not going to get,
I find that in Meridian,
lose a lot of relationship.
People, yeah. A lot of people find that, I find that they're like, you don't live in Meridian. I said, nope. I come, you know, from Jackson once a week. They're like, oh, thank goodness. Right. Because it's such a tight knit group. Right.
Yeah.
It's a small town. And it's that small town feel. And it's like, oh, if I tell my counselor this, well, they know so-and-so. You always, it's that is hard to get away from, especially in a small town like Meridian.
Yeah.
That people are generally like, oh, I'm so glad you don't live here. And that is a big piece of it. And I've been there. I've been on the, I've been on the receiving end of bad counseling. It was really hard, to have a counselor as I'm sharing my story and what I was going through at the time. And then they just within 30, 40 minutes of meeting me, just basically called me crazy. And it was really, that was really heartbreaking. And it was really painful to have someone who didn't really know me judge me because I was sharing honestly. And so when I started Mississippi Counseling Associates, that was a big part of what I looked for in therapists that have been on the receiving end of that, on the receiving end of counseling. Hopefully not a terrible experience. I don't want anybody to have a terrible experience, obviously.
Yeah.
But they understand what it's like to show up and feel undressed and have somebody who you don't know hearing all of this. If you work at Mississippi Counseling Associates, you have to know the unnerving feeling of this person could fully judge me right now. Mm-hmm. And it's a really scary process. And so the first thing I want to say is we just respect that vulnerability it takes to show up. We respect the idea that even just filling out our form and sending us an email, that's a risky thing.
Yeah.
That's a vulnerable step. And we are going to respect the vulnerability, and any good therapist will respect the vulnerability that the client is taking, in especially right now, but at any time in counseling, because it's risky, it's scary. And if you are considering counseling right now, and I would do my homework on your therapist, you know, ask them first, you know, hey, have you been to counseling? If they're like, well, just hang up the phone. Don't even continue. Because we have to know what it's like to be in that seat. It's a scary seat. And we want to respect and honor the risk that people come that are coming to our office looking for help.
Yeah. It's the counselor has to recognize their own baggage. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the, you know, I had one semester of pastoral counseling, so therefore I became an expert after that semester. It was taught by John Scofield over, John Cofield, and over at RTS Orlando. So, but that was one of the things he said was, you know, the counselor, the pastor, like, has to recognize you're walking in there with baggage, and if you don't recognize the bags you're bringing in there yourself, then you're really going to screw some people up.
Yep.
Because you're gonna read yourself into them, you're gonna be offended, you're gonna buy your own, you know, legend and think that you don't have problems, you know, you're gonna get judgy and just like
And you can even like prescribe them what worked for you, but maybe a completely out of context of who they are and what they have going on in their life. Like, it may not work for them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You've got to check all that.
So actually that brings up a good point. When you're doing counseling and you're talking to somebody, and this is, you know, there are times where, it's very, obviously it's very individualized, but also, it's kind of a lot of counseling, as far as I understand, some of the best counseling that I've received and hopefully given is when I help someone come to their own conclusion, rather than me go, they come to me, they tell me their symptoms and I prescribe, you know, X thing. Like, I might give them, when I'm talking to somebody, I might give them an exercise to do, but it's not to get them to arrive at a specific conclusion. It's usually to get them to think more deeply about something, and things like that. But it's not is that the general approach? Is that right?
There's a lot of that. And I think that my goal in counseling is always to help a client have a better grasp of what's going on for them internally, so that they can share about it in a way that helps it go from like sitting on their chest.
Yeah.
And helps it kind of like, oh, now it's sitting over there, but it's not so weighty. It's not so overwhelming. And the way to do that is often just to be a good listener. I do a lot of listening. Anybody listening to this that knew me in high school will find that very hard to believe. But I have become a very good listener. And really it's a lot of reflecting, right? Just a lot of being able to say, this is what I hear you saying. And when somebody experiences somebody else saying, yes, you hear me, suddenly they're not alone in that thought. And suddenly that thought is not so overwhelming, right? If you go back to the woods example, if I'm in the woods by myself and I hear that twig break next to me off path, I will immediately go to the worst case scenario.
Right.
There was a study done where they had somebody stand in front of a mountain and they asked, how high is that mountain? And they recorded what they said. Then they had somebody else come stand next to them that was an important figure in their life. And they said, how tall is that mountain? And they recorded what they said. Consistently across the board, everybody they did this with, when they stood alone, would say a mountain was higher than it actually was. And when they stood there with someone who was important to them, they guessed the mountain was lower than it actually was. That is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
Right. Having somebody with you literally says that mountain is smaller than if I was to think about going over that mountain alone.
Yeah.
And I like to think about counseling like that. It's just my job is to come alongside you in your journey, not mine, your journey, so that your journey seems to you in your own experience something that you are able and capable of doing, rather than the way we often feel when we're in it alone, which is, I'm not capable, I can't do this, it's just too big.
Yeah, the two are better than one, and the threefold cord is not easily broken.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so well, that is awesome. So last question here. So what, you've already mentioned a couple of them, but what are some specific texts or theological truths that you find yourself returning to regularly or even sharing with others that really speak to your own heart and encourage you in this time?
I think for one of the ones that I think about in this crazy world we're in right now is it would be things that I want to make sure that I'm doing during this is, one, I want to stay out of extreme stances, right?
Yeah.
This is not God punishing the world, right? Mm-hmm. That's one way to take this whole thing, or this is not the end times, right? If it is, I'm unconcerned about it because there's only one aspect about all that I'm worried about right now is that, hey, if Jesus returns, that'd be awesome. Cool.
Yes.
Right. But to live and convincing myself that that's what's happening, that's going to create a lot more chaos for me. One of the things that I find is living in a very real sense and staying in reality around that this is not an easy time. And so really to turn to something that would be, you know, for me, okay, this is for me. It is difficult when someone comes to me and says, hey, man, everything works for good. It's like, all right, thanks. It doesn't match. It doesn't match what I'm feeling in here.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't mean it's not true. Yeah. But when truth is not paired with what's happening in here, it's going to miss the mark.
Right? And also, I'd say that's, and even then, that sticks to me because, I mean, that's Romans 8. And and it's what's interesting about that passage is because I just used it as a part of my sermon on Sunday. But the point, one of the point I was making was is because I preached on Lazarus's resurrection, and it was talking about how here's this text where it says the friend of Jesus, whom he loved, suffered and illness and died, and just you know how you know and talked about how encouraging it was to know that Jesus promises to bring glory to those whom he loves, even when we don't understand why Jesus is doing certain things or not doing things. Like, don't get why he's doing what he's doing, but we can be sure that he loves us and that he is going to bring glory out of it. And even then, that's what that's kind of a sense of what Paul is saying in Romans 8. Because before that passage, before that kind of thing, people turn that into like a little coffee cup verse, you know, to kind of all things, you know, it's like, but he says that at the end of saying
a group of terrible things are happening to me.
Well, yeah, he says these present sufferings are not worth comparing to the glory, but he talks about these present sufferings and creation groaning under the curse. So he, like Paul doesn't use it in a trite way.
He doesn't. It's often used that way.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is I have to. So like one of the things that keeps hitting me is Lamentations 3, right? It is suffering. It is a lamentation. I mean, it is suffering. And if you read through the first section of Lamentations 3, dude had it bad, right? But there's certain verses that are in it that like really speak to, I think, what we're feeling right now. And there was some, he's hemmed me in. He's locked me up. He shuts me in. I'll never get out. He manacles my hands. He shackles my feet, right? Even as we plea for help, he locks up my prayers and throws away the key, right? It's like, man, here we are in week 3 of being shut into our house. And it's not for lack of people praying and saying, God, end this thing, help us find a way out. And it can feel like, man, we don't have a prayer's chance in this thing, right? And we can feel very much out of control. And that's, man, that's Lamb 3 right here. And as you look through it towards the end, he's got in the middle is a 16. He says, he ground my face in the gravel. That can't be fun. He pounded me in the mud. I gave up on life altogether. You know, I hear people talking like that.
Yeah.
I just want to give up. I'll give up on life altogether. I have forgotten what the good life is like. And I say to myself, this is it. Now I'm finished. God is a lost cause. And he goes on to say, I'll never forget the trouble, right? Nor does God expect us to. He doesn't expect us to forget that this was difficult, right? Yeah. I'll never forget the trouble, the utter lostness, the taste of ashes, the poison I've swallowed. I remember it all. How well I remember the feeling of hitting the bottom. And if you feel like you've hit the bottom, man, this is an awful feeling.
And what does it mean that not only that it says that, but the fact that God himself inspired the Spirit to inscripturate that?
Right. That's forever now.
That he wants us to know, like to read, he wants us today, thousands of years later, to read that.
Right.
It's not like we discovered the lost hidden mail that God was like, oops, I didn't want you to see this part.
Right.
No, he's like,
it's here for our benefit.
Yeah.
To really fine tune our ability to know and pen and understand what this moment is like. Right. Because that's what it took. this moment was penned. All of the Psalms are penning the moments of great trouble and of great celebration, right? Mm-hmm. So then he goes on. He says, I remember the feeling of hitting the bottom, but there's one thing, there's one other thing I remember. And remembering this, I keep a grip on hope. God's loyal love could not have run out. Mm. His merciful love could not have dried up. They're created new every morning.
I'm crying right now, man. I'm tearing up.
How great is his faithfulness? Of course we are, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sticking with God, and I'll say it again. He's all I've got left.
Yeah.
Right? When we hit the bottom sometimes, he's saying, one thing I'm going to hold on to here. And holding on to, we have hope. There is no way, no chance at all, ever, that the loyal love of God has run out. Not even today. Not tomorrow. Not if I can't leave my house for another 2 months, 3 months. If I had to stay in my house for a year, every morning is a fresh batch of love, mercy, grace, kindness.
Hmm. Well, man, that is, I think that's a good note to end on. So, yeah. So,
sounds good.
Man, just stay on the line for a minute, but thank you so much for coming on here.
This
was so great. And we'll talk to you later. Well, that's going to do it for us today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Michael Preston. And make sure you check out the show notes for links to all the things that he referenced in this episode. We're talking about the grief ball and the emotion wheel, all those things like that. Also the link to Michael's website for his counseling practice will be on the website as well. So if you have a comment, question, topic, you need some help finding those resources, you can also email me at eric@baileychurch.com. So for the Rookie Pastor Podcast, I'm Eric Mavitt. And remember, just one step forward.